Agnolo Bronzino's talent as draftsman brought him under the patronage of Duke Cosimo de' Medici, who went on to found the Uffizi Gallery in Florence. Although Bronzino was one of the greatest of the court artists of the Medicis of the 16th century, his style and subject matter fell out of fashion, and his work has rarely been given the attention it deserves. Now, for the first time, an exhibition of Bronzino's drawings are on display at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, bringing together works from all over the world. And I'm very pleased to welcome to our show Carmen Bambach, who is the curator in the Department of Drawings and Prints at the Met, and Janet Cox Rurick, professor of 16th century Italian and French art at CUNY. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Anna.
Carmen, why is this the first time that Bronzino's work has been put together in an exhibition at the Met?
Well, it's a bit of a complicated question. The part that's easy to explain is the fact that the loans come from many international institutions, and so it's very difficult to arrange those loans coming from the various museums that they all coincide at one time.
Was it easier to put together an exhibit of drawings?
Well, you remember, drawings are quite fragile. They are easily damaged by light, and in fact, their fragility means that not many of them have survived. And so there must be very special conditions to exhibit them. And drawings require a resting period, usually of 3 to 5 years. So imagine getting all the museums to agree that their resting period will coincide with what the Met would like to have for their exhibition.
And yet you got pretty much all the drawings that are still available or still extant?
That's correct. And we're about to receive, in fact, the final loan from the Biblioteca Ambrosiana in Milan that will make our selection of drawings complete in the exhibition. It's a very rare drawing that has just been finished restoration that underwent for 9 years.
Janet, our listeners may be familiar with some of Bronzino's portraits. The Met has his portrait of a young man on display. The portrait of Ludovico Capponi is at the Frick. Both show aristocratic young men in stylish black tunics. Are they typical of his work?
Are these portraits typical? Absolutely. His portraits follow a kind of formula. His sitters are mainly the Medici family and their many children or members of the court, and they are courtiers, and they dress appropriately in black, which was very fashionable at the time.
Was he best known for the portraits?
Well, known is not a word I think that we really want to apply to his own time. I would say he's probably better known in his own time for frescoes and large-scale works which could be seen by people.
Portraits would be in private collections.
Yeah.
His real name was Agnolo di Cosimo, and he was the son of a butcher. How did he come to be known as Bronzino, and was it typical for someone from such a modest background to become such an important artist?
Well, there are many artists who came from extremely poor circumstances. It's been speculated that he had a ruddy complexion, and that's why he was called Bronzino, but I'm not sure that's correct.
Carmen, why did his work fall out of fashion?
Well, probably because when the history of Italian art was being written in the early 20th century, there was not a taste for Mannerist art, and Bronzino in particular, and the idea of this very sophisticated, very elegant style in which the human figure is used in very ornamental ways, and there are many layers of symbolic meaning, that this kind of militated against the taste of the early 20th century critics, who were interested, if you remember, in the abstraction and probably a simpler vocabulary of form.
But well, first, we probably have to explain what mannerism is. It came about in reaction to the High Renaissance?
Yes.
In a way, what artists said, there's nothing left to be done?
I think Janet probably has the best take on this because she's worked on mannerism in Florence, especially for pretty much all her career.
Mannerism actually began with the adjective mannered, mm-hmm. which is a bit of a pejorative description of these artists who came after the great masters of the High Renaissance, after Raphael and so on.
But some of those, the mannerists, have always been popular, as far as I can tell. When I was in school, we studied the Madonna of the Long Neck by Parmigianino. Tintoretto, El Greco, sure popular there, mannerist artists.
They are indeed.
So why less Branzino? Because his work is so elegant and meticulous, you think? Some people saw it as uptight, whereas those other artists are kind of looser.
Well, Greco is an exception because he's so incredibly expressive and was always of interest. And perhaps Tintoretto too. But yes, Branzino was laid back, as we would say.
One of the other things that is really interesting to remember is that one of the most influential critics of the early 20th century to write about Branzino was Bernard Berenson, who absolutely seems to have detested Branzino. He just did not get him. Plus, he got all his attributions incorrect. And so it really means that the field of study was not developed enough to understand Branzino in a historical fashion, at least when the history of Italian art was being written in the early 20th century.
What about the earlier history of Italian art, Vasari's Lives? Didn't he also badmouth Branzino?
Well, we must remember that Vasari was Branzino's ultimate rival. And remember that Vasari was also an artist who was very prolific, who worked very, very fast. He worked with teams of assistants. In the time that it takes Branzino to fresco the Chapel of Eleonora di Toledo, Vasari had essentially frescoed three stories of the Palazzo Vecchio. So there is that element. And Cosimo de' Medici seems to prefer Vasari towards the 1550s, when Vasari comes back to Florence.
Do you think that's hurt Vasari's reputation more recent years? Because I remember in art history classes being told, well, Vasari is really important because he starts the whole process of art history, but you can't believe a word he said.
I think that's something of an exaggeration. I mean, without Vasari, we would be lost. The lives of the artists are essential.
What did he tell us about Branzino and Branzino? Didn't he also talk about Branzino's relationship to his friend and teacher, Pontormo?
Absolutely. Yes. He was like a son to Pontormo, and I think we demonstrate that in our show with several drawings by Pontormo and emphasizing the connections.
Didn't they also collaborate in some of the drawings?
Yes, there are drawings in which we're careful to distinguish between the two hands, absolutely.
One of the things that is really interesting is that if we remember that art was taught to people at that time through apprenticeships. So in other words, the young boy comes into the master's workshop and learns by imitating the master's hand. The first task they do is also imitate the drawing style of the master. So that's why we have, in fact, many interesting issues of attribution and authorship.
Isn't it also suggested that Pontormo and Branzino had another kind of relationship? No?
I don't think so.
Oh, I've read that, and it struck me as nothing all that shocking, considering the fact that we know Leonardo was gay and Michelangelo was gay.
It was quite common, indeed, but I don't think we need to stress that, and there's no evidence.
Yeah, and one gets a sense that there is this kind of paternal relationship. Mm. Pontormo is 9 years older than Branzino, and Branzino really comes in almost like a family member. And it is very typical, actually, also in Branzino's case, that he adopts the family of Alessandro Allori. So it's much more of a familial kind of relationship than we assume today.
These three artists in a row.
Yes, very important fact.
So what happened? When did Branzino start being taken seriously again?
I would say in the 1950s and 60s.
Oh, that recently?
Yes.
Because I know that when the Allegory of Venus and Cupid was acquired by the National Gallery in London in 1860, it was considered very risque.
Yes, it was overpainted.
It became controversial.
Mm, right.
It was overpainted. There were draperies over all the exposed parts.
He wasn't the only painter of nudes, and his nudes weren't particularly explicit.
Oh, well, I think the ones in that picture are. Definitely.
One of the things that I think is very striking also about Branzino's figure drawings is the extent to which they show us a creative process underway. And therefore, one of the things that one has to pay very close attention, look at the drawings very closely, for all the erased reinforcement lines, all the erased pentimenti, in other words. Bronzino was really committed to this craftsmanship of drawing and painting, and he believed in a pulitezza, in a cleanliness of drawing technique. It's easy for a connoisseur to mistake those signs and not see these drawings as tremendously energetic works of creativity. And I think that's basically where Berenson, for example, goes wrong.
My guests are Carmen Bambach, a curator in the Department of Drawings and Prints at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and Janet Cox-Rerick, distinguished professor of 16th century Italian and French art, Renaissance drawings at the City University of New York. We're talking about the drawings of Bronzino exhibition at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, almost and soon to be as complete as anybody could ever make an exhibit. But were Bronzino's drawings intended to be drawings, or were they simply always done in preparation for paintings?
Well, this is a big question of drawings at this period. At what point do they become independent works of art, and as opposed to being preparatory to paintings? And I would say with Bronzino, everything is preparatory to paintings. Yeah.
Some of them almost seem to be a totally detailed preparation
for
a painting.
That's right. And it has a little bit to do also with his artistic heritage, because Pontormo also does not really produce drawings that are not for a functional purpose. And so there is this very distinct line of thought, really, in the training that Bronzino receives, and this belief in a very, very functional activity.
How much was he involved in the politics of the time? Because the politics of Florence in the 16th century was quite complicated, wasn't it, with a lot of power shifts? Would he be a favorite of one and then go out of favor because somebody else came to power?
Well, he was lucky that Duke Cosimo de' Medici was his patron.
Yes.
And they
how did that happen? This is the son of a butcher.
Well, he trained with Pontormo, and he got commissions through Pontormo in the 1520s, and then went on his own in the 30s and made his name.
We also have a great tradition of artists who come from very humble beginnings, who educate themselves through their friendships, through their apprenticeships, because Pontormo himself was quite a learned man. And so one can almost sense the kind of self-cultivation that Bronzino sort of undergoes. Remember that he rises to become an extraordinary poet of the most refined sensibility, sometimes very salacious, very pornographic, but this is a man of profoundly literary sensibilities, and he makes those friendships in intellectual circles count in Florence.
Did he ever work outside of Florence?
Yes, he went to Urbino and Pesaro, worked for the Dukes there, and then came back. Actually, he did that in 1530 when he was still quite young. And then when he came back, he was able to assume a more important role, and in 1539, he became the chief painter to Duke Cosimo de' Medici, and his wife Eleonora di Toledo, whose chapel he decorated, it, as we know.
Which some people consider his masterpiece.
I certainly, having written a book on the subject.
One of the things that I found really fascinating about working on this project was actually getting to know Janet better as a historian. And one of the things that she really brought to my attention was a very precious relationship of Bronzino to his patron, the Duchess Eleonora di Toledo. Clearly, there was a great sense of support, a great sense of understanding from the Duchess, and I think really that is a tribute to Janet's scholarship.
Now, most of the drawings are done in black chalk, a couple in pen and ink would both have been available to artists at the time?
Yeah. One of the things that's really interesting is there is this dialogue that Alessandro Allori, who was his pupil, wrote on the Ragionamenti delle Regole del Disegno. And there Alessandro Allori says, Bronzino is one interlocutor in this dialogue, and Bronzino is supposed to have said that he preferred black chalk as a drawing medium because one could erase it very carefully with the soft inside of bread, of the breadcrumb. And so it is interesting
that kneaded erasers were
invented. Exactly. And so you get the sense that this is a medium that he really loves, and especially for figure drawings after the nude model.
And actually, he abandoned the red chalk, which is more typical of Florentine artists like Pontormo, and turned, after 1530 particularly, to the black.
His work isn't always in perfect proportion, which disturbs the modern artist in me. You know, I would think, gee, that's such a fabulous drawing, but why is the head too small? Why is that arm so outsized? Did that not matter to artists at the time?
I think, Leonard, I have a feeling that it's a drawing of the portrait that you have in mind, where you do sense that slight misproportion. But what's really interesting about that drawing is that it's a still work in progress. And so, okay, so he goofed on the proportions. You look at the lower right and the sheet of the Uffizi, and you see the hand of the figure being reprised. So it's important to recall these drawings are being done for his own purposes, very private purposes, and he continues to think about it on the sheet of paper. It's not a completed act.
Did his career suffer after Eleonora died?
I wouldn't say so.
I just wonder, because sometimes when you have a strong patriot,
there wasn't much left of it.
You said he also wrote poetry.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did he encourage other artists and writers? Was there that kind of sense of community at the time?
Yes, among the intellectuals. In fact, Bronzino had a community of other literati with whom he exchanged sonnets. Mm-hmm. So one would write a sonnet in the morning, he would reply with another sonnet in the afternoon. I mean, in the case of Cellini and Ammanati, those are Varchi and Annibale Caro are among the learned people and artists with whom he exchanged sonnets. Mm-hmm.
And they all belong to the Accademia del Disegno in Florence. I mean, it was
What's the
academy.
Story behind the note on the display, which looks like a groveling apology to his patron, the Duke? It's in the catalog, page 291. Do you know what I'm talking about? No?
No, you'll have to enlighten us.
It's okay. We're pretty much out of time. What was the payment system? Would he have been paid well?
We have records of his payments, not all of them, of course, but he was on salary with the Duke. That was the most important thing.
I would assume that you're taking this opportunity to do some x-rays of the drawings.
Not x-rays of the drawings. We did for the paintings and the infrared reflectography, and this shows actually the design process underneath a perfectly painted surface. So it means that Bronzino's design process did not stop with the drawings on paper. It continued on the prime panel of the painting.
Well, you have provided us, even though the catalog is called The Drawings of Bronzino, there's a large section of paintings. Because you wanted to make us aware of the dialogue between the drawings and the painting.
Yes, and I think it also allows one to see the ways in which his designs are quite transformed when they become paintings. Even his figures, the models are very human in the drawings. They're not so as much in the paintings.
And also the preparatory process as such is demonstrated by our big and beautiful insert of color plates.
Although
the
portrait that has graced the exhibit and is on the cover of the catalog of a woman, I guess, a woman's face, has to be one of the most beautiful drawings ever made. And it's pretty much almost as complete as any painting could be.
Yes, it's true. It's actually, we also need to remember that it's a full-scale drawing for a fresco, so a cartoon, a profoundly utilitarian kind of drawing as well as a beautiful work of art.
We have a lovely slideshow of images from the show on our website at wnyc.org. We've been talking about the major exhibit at the Metropolitan Museum of Art, The Drawings of Bronzino. Does this exhibit move on, or does it ever move on?
April 18th, and we are the single venue. These are rare and very fragile works.
My great thanks to Carmen Bambach, curator in the Department of Drawings and Prints at the Met, and Janet Cox Rurick, professor of 16th century Italian and French art at CUNY, for being on our show today.
Thank you.